when the players have a shared sense in this, it flows freely and everybody understands what we're here for.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we are joined by Coach Dante Jones, the assistant coach for the LA Clippers and a former NBA veteran. Coach Jones played college basketball at Rutgers before transferring to Duke, where he helped lead the Blue Devils to a Final Four. He was selected 20th overall in the 2003 NBA draft and went on to play 13 seasons in the league with teams including the Grizzlies, Nuggets, Pacers, Mavericks, Hawks, Cavaliers, and more. Known for his toughness and defensive mindset, he was part of the 2016 NBA Championship Cleveland Cavaliers team. After retiring, Jones transitioned into coaching and joined the Clippers staff under head coach Tyronn Lue. His career has been defined by professionalism, preparation, and the ability to connect with players. In this episode, we talk about his NBA moment, which also helped out his coaching career, what a championship locker room consists of, and one of the misunderstood parts of coaching at the NBA level. Please welcome to the podcast, Coach Dante Jones.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines.
Welcome back, coaches, and thanks again for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Today, we got a special guest. We got a guy who has a lot of tenure in the basketball realm. First, I should say, and I apologize, I skipped. You got Alan Major, Doug Caputo, as always. I forgot who we were for a second. I got too excited. Ladies and gentlemen, we have the current assistant coach with the LA Clippers, and I have to make sure to throw in there, NBA champion with the Cleveland Cavaliers. I wore the Cavs shirt just for a specific reason, just because I knew who we were coming into to talk today. But ladies and gentlemen, Coach Dante Jones. Coach Jones, what's going on?
Not much. How you guys doing today?
Good, man. Appreciate you jumping on.
Thank you for having me.
Coach, you have a lot to talk about in a limited amount of time, and we want to make sure to get as much of it as possible because you've had great experiences. As we were joking around before hopping on here, obviously your college career going into your NBA tenure, long NBA career, which not a lot of people get the opportunity to do, but then going from being a player to now being on the other side of the ball. But just first things first, we have to ask this. We've had a couple people who've been from the league on here, and just if there was a moment where you would say is your welcome to the NBA moment. Everybody has one, I'm sure. What would yours be looking back on everything?
See, I watch you guys' podcast, right? And I've heard this question before. And when I heard it, it took a little bit of thinking for me in that cycle of it. And I've been fortunate enough. I've been in NBA environments before I was in the NBA. My cousin Al Harrington got drafted early. And we trained together in the summer. So I was around since I was a freshman at Rutgers. I was around Kevin Garnett, Chauncey Billups, Tyronn Lue. Those are my vets. So I had NBA teachers early in my career, and they were hard on me when I was in college. So by the time I got to the league, I think my welcome to the NBA moment was a moment of humility because I got drafted to a team that was in like the second or third year of expansion, the Memphis Grizzlies. And I was coming from Duke. So Duke, everything was in place. Everything was in order. We had the best of everything. And I was coming to a team that didn't even have a practice facility. I was coming to a team. We practiced at a local college. We had an arena that was being built, but we practiced an arena that kind of wasn't meant for basketball. We didn't fly the same way I flew in college. So it was a moment of humility and stepping back with the resources that were allotted to me and just taking advantage of what was there rather than thinking everything should be how it was before I got there. And I had a great coach in Hubie Brown who humbled me a great deal in just adjusting to what the league is and how things should go.
Yeah. It's funny. You probably had two, you know, welcome to the NBA moments. You had one as a player, then you probably, what was the one as a coach like? Because you probably had two different welcome to the NBA moments. Like the player one makes sense, but then I wonder if you had one as a coach too.
Just being a rookie all over again as a coach and not knowing and just having to learn the cadence and the way things go as a coach, the process and procedures. I had some great teachers on this side. Our video coordinators and our assistant coaches helped me out a great deal, but just teaching me how a practice goes rather than just being involved in a practice, what takes place before practice, all the preparation that goes on in the video room. I was taught by some really good people and I didn't know as much as I thought I knew on how the flow of a practice and the lead up into a game and just all the things that we prepare to get done.
Yeah. Like the amount that goes into practice for 2 hours or an hour and a half, and then the amount that goes into a 2 hour game, all the buildup. That probably was eye opening, I'm sure.
And then I also had a welcome to what coaching really is. I shared this experience with Coach Lou the other day because not only was he my coach, but I work with him now. And when I got to the Cleveland Cavaliers, you have to understand, I came to a team where my really good friend was the coach. And I watched the media just like you guys do. So that whole narrative of LeBron's coach, or is he really coaching the team? That was, even though it goes on in the background, you'd be surprised on how much it dictates your thought process, period. And I went into that experience looking at him differently than what he really was, just to see him prepare, just to see how he kept control of a team. That wasn't the friend that I knew. That wasn't the guy that I trained with. That wasn't one of my mentors in basketball. That was a whole different individual that was giving his life to a new craft. And that was eye-opening for me, just to see somebody evolve and change into a whole nother role. I had never seen him in this light before. I had never seen the responsibility that he was taking on. I never seen him prepare like the way he did. That was another way of just seeing what was possible, going from somebody who I trained with, who I related to, who I've been in the grind with, see him change and evolve into be a master of his craft, to be able to control the room, to be able to relate and communicate to players. Like, that was an extreme eye-opening experience for me.
Wow. Yeah, no, I bet it was. I bet it was, because the narrative, like you say, is probably he's a guy letting things go in the film room. Well, LeBron did it. Let that slide, versus LeBron did it. He hits pause and says, hey, and he does that 1 through 15, as opposed to a lot of people just think players coach maybe concedes this to this guy, concedes this to that guy. And then to get a whole different view of this guy's in control of the whole deal. It'd be great to see that.
Yeah, how he communicated, how he delegated, how he had the room, and how much time he put into it. It was amazing. And we had a play in the playoffs where I think it was a Detroit game, and it was a baseline out of bounds, and as Kyrie hits the shot to win the game. But to see his timing and to see when the refs gave him where the ball was, and to see like how he put his mind to what was. I saw a click. I saw the ref give him the ball, said where it is. He said, bam, go to the board, give me something, shoot it out, game win, game over. I just didn't know that my guy had that. So that was not eye-opening for me.
Yeah. And that's a reflection of his maturation. You know, from that friendship time to now, here's a guy this guy's in charge. So,
yes.
Yeah. Great stuff,
man. That'd definitely be a cool experience to be able to see your friend grow, and especially not only grow, but like now he's your coach. Like, that would definitely be a cool experience to be able to have, like, your friend be your coach, be the one who's leading you and be leading the program and everything. But talking on that, like, I selfishly have to bring up, right, the Cavs team, just in more of a holistic picture just for all teams out there. You've been a part of a championship team, as we said, 2016, you guys won the NBA championship. And I know you've been a part of some phenomenal programs, but alongside some great players, just to name a couple, but Carmelo Anthony, Allen Iverson, Paul George, Dirk Nowitzki, Chris Paul, obviously, as you said, LeBron, like those are, and that's just a handful of great people you play with. With all of them, just what did the locker rooms, or I should say the best locker rooms, really show to you? Like, what would be chemistry? Were there some things that you took away from those that maybe helped you from now on your coaching?
With those locker rooms of the good teams that I've been a part of, whether it be college, whether it be NBA, like there was consistent things like leadership, accountability, competition, like a shared selflessness of accomplishment, collaboration, communication was high. The players controlled the locker room as much as the coaches did. So that was the foundations for all good teams that I've been a part of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, player-led versus coach-led.
Right. And when it's player led, when they're when the players are accountable, like it's easier for the coaches to come in and to not have to be as hands on, to delegate as much. When the players have a shared sense in this, it flows freely and everybody understands what we're here for.
Yeah, for sure. It feels like a partnership at that point. Definitely. And then one side doesn't want to let the other down. Coaches don't want to let the players down by not being prepared in every way. Players don't want to let the coaches down by not giving their best in terms of effort and buying in as best they can. So when that partnership is really clicking, man, like you said, that's why winning is so hard, because right. There's very few people that are willing to just fully sell out in both directions like that.
And you get a group of guys that all have the same main goal, all find a purpose within the goal. You have a leader who takes leadership seriously on a daily basis, not only with their words, but their actions. You have a coach that takes it the same way. And then the communication between the two, like those are the consistent things on really good teams.
Yeah, for sure. The beauty of that is you come in front loaded with some of that. Coming from a program like Duke, you know, you came from a program that has so used to winning. So there's a lot of conversations in terms of you didn't have to have being told about how important winning is. Like you walked in the door knowing that winning is important, versus had you come from a mediocre college program, that's a whole nother level of kind of growth that you're going to have to figure out, is just the winning, understanding the importance of the professionalism, which is another thing too. Thank goodness for Duke, in a sense that like you just came in just knowing how important winning is.
No, definitely. Because that's one of the reasons why I went to Duke. I took a lot of heat for changing and going to a different school. And the only reason I did is because when I took my, number one, I didn't want to take my recruiting visit to Duke. My father made me. I had my list of schools. My father was mature enough to understand that I had to see something different and to keep my options open. And when I got there, I knew one thing, that winning was the most paramount thing of what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a part of a winning environment. I wanted to be in a winning culture. I wanted to be surrounded by people like me who cared as much about winning as I did. And that's preparing on a yearly basis, not just when basketball season came around. And when I first got there, that was the standard that not that Coach K was preaching when I got there. It was the players were showing up to play. And then the way they play was in a way to get better, not to just fulfill an obligation. So that was the standard that was set as soon as I walked on my visit. And then everything just went up from there. And I'm lucky to have that experience, to play for a coach like Coach K, to be around winners like the guys that I played with, the Shane Battys, the Mike Dunleavy's, Carlos Boozer, Jason Williams, like those guys. Chris Carwell was around, Nate James, like guys who've seen a bunch of winning, been a part of a bunch of winning. And those guys helped shape me, because when I came, I had to fit into what they were doing. I didn't know as much about winning as I thought I did. And those guys helped me, and it helped elevate me to how to prepare, to how to go about winning on a daily basis. That's what practice is about. How do you practice? How hard you practice? How hard you work in the offseason? Those were guys that helped me out a great deal. And when I got that and going to the league, it was just seamless transition.
Wow. If anybody wants to know the definition of a brotherhood, you just gave it to them.
Yeah.
That's the definition of a brotherhood. Like literally everything you just said. So if people don't pull anything else from this pod, or they got to take a break and do something else at this point when it drops, like that alone is solid gold, man. That's incredible.
Let me ask this, because I'm seeing just a common theme. Like, obviously, Coach K, I mean, everybody, you can speak volumes. I'm sure you can, especially about his coaching experiences. Like, everybody, there's more than enough out there that a lot of people can get and take from what he has put out there in such a program. But just, like, off of that, other coaches that you have seen, what styles of coaching? Was there anything in particular that kind of really pulled you in, gravitated you more as a player? And then is that any way helping shape the way you're now coaching?
Definitely. The coaches that I played for over my career have definitely shaped the way I want to coach and how I view coaching now. As you said, starting with Coach K, the master of everything, whether it be communication, whether it be X's and O's, defense, motivation, coaching players where they are, not the group, but coaching each player as an individual. It started with that, and I got a chance to see that, even how he coached me individually and how he coached the group. Then I started with Hubie Brown, and that's the master of numbers. And an old school guy who was a master of habits. Like, we practiced the same way every day, just not on Sunday. We had 82 shoot arounds, and we practiced went the same way, but we were very diligent in how we did things. And those habits carried over into the game. Mike Fratello, old
consistency.
Yes, definitely.
Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Yes, the consistency of what we did that went directly into the games, and just having those habits every day and building like that helped us become the 50-win team that we were when people didn't think we could win at the high level. Mike Fratello, I go to George Carl, the master of collaboration, asking my input on how I want to guard or what do I see on the floor. We had a dialogue between the players in shoot-arounds. We talked about what the coverages were rather than dictating and telling us how we have to cover today. What do you see? How can we be better? How can we come to some type of common ground? This is A, this is B. So now that you feel comfortable in it rather than feeling like you can't get something done, I thought that was something that just helped everything go smooth in the transitions of how we're growing as a team when we got a leader like Chauncey Billups. I have Doc Rivers. I had, the master of ATOs and Rick Carlisle, just seeing how his mind transpires to the paper and just is how he views offense, how he grows with the game. Who else? Frank Vogel, the master of positivity. I saw how positivity can like change the whole morale of a team with just your words to treat people.
Rick Carlisle, too, I was going to say. With the experience that he just had, too, and the Pacers.
Yeah, definitely. How you speak to your players and how you motivate them can help them overachieve. On a Pacer team where I play for Frank Vogel, just how he spoke to those guys, how we got those young guys to overachieve and to buy into what it was when it wasn't always that before he got the job. So I've learned a lot from those guys, Doc Rivers, and how he managed a team from a player coach perspective, how he communicated with them, how he maneuvered with the schedule, whether it didn't have to be as strict as most people think, how he prioritized rest, how he gave delegated responsibilities. And then I finished with Ty Lue, who I think at my beginning of my end came together with those. He mirrored what Coach K did. He can basically do it all. He can communicate with you. He can motivate. He can do defense, the offense. He can do everything on the spectrum. But it's a communication between player and coach to where we have this shared experience and guys feel confident about going out there and doing it as a group.
You got a lot of coaching left in your career, but do me a favor. When you all are said and done, write a book, please.
You got so many good experiences.
I mean, I'm lucky, man. I'm not kidding. Like this is like the guys that you just reeled off. The beauty of it is, Dante, and you like it, you've really started to grasp this. I know you have, is every one of those guys is a part of like you're putting together your philosophy, but every one of those guys is part of your recipe. Yep. Coach Carlisle is part of the recipe, and Doc Definitely. Rivers as a pinch of salt, and Ty Lue as a half a cup of spices, and then Hubie Brown is so every guy is like literally help shape who you are. And the great part about, and Chris has mentioned this in working with you, and we can feel it. I know Doug can. I can feel it through the screen. The clarity that you have in terms of how you view the game. If you had to be named a head coach somewhere tomorrow, I think you feel pretty secure and not so much X and O what you're going to run. I know that, but it gets back to what you said. The number one thing every head coach has to be able to do is command the room. And that clarity that you have leads to conviction when you speak. And then that conviction when you speak, people feel that. And that's what commanding the room means, is that there isn't a lot of ums and ahs and I thinks. And it's so that clarity and conviction literally go hand in hand. But I can feel it coming through this pod, man. Like everybody in your rearview mirror has done a phenomenal job of pouring into you in that regard.
And I'm lucky for my past, and I'm very thankful that's led up today. Even the guy that I get to work with today, Jeff Van Gundy, the master of the details, the person who's unapologetically himself, his clarity on and as much time he puts into how he communicates to the group. These are things that I'm getting to learn on a daily basis with just the addition of our new coach. So I'm very lucky in this journey that I've been on to be around so many great minds, to have so many experiences with people who put a lot of hard work into coaching.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a hell of a lineup.
No doubt. No, and I got to ask too, what do you think? A lot of people have different ways that they look at it with this, but like, did you find it hard to be, or I should say, go from a player to a coach. I feel like, especially being more of a guard, like it's probably not too hard because you're already doing it as a player. And then once you step onto the coaching side, but like being able to explain everything and be more analytical and being able to communicate it, I guess, is probably one of the, I would say, more difficult things to be able to learn. Was it, did you find that step from a coach over to a, or excuse me, from a player over to a coach challenging?
I don't, because the back end of my career, that is what I was just genuinely in giving back to my team. Being at the end of a bench, I had the opportunity to communicate and see the game in a different aspect. And those last 4 years of my of me being on teams, I just wanted to give back. I wanted to give as much information as possible. I wanted to teach as much as possible. I wanted to help as much as possible. And I felt like there were veterans in my past that held a lot of information in competition. And I didn't want to be like that. I wanted to share as much as I could. I wanted to compete with the young guys, don't get me wrong, but I also didn't mind teaching and telling my story and telling how I prepared and just showing a bunch of different things. When I got to a guy like Paul George and Lance Stephenson, like that was the beginning of me trying to teach and tell. And part of my coaching journey, when I got to the G League, I had some really good coaches that knew that I was fighting for an opportunity, but helped me learn how to communicate better, to not talk down to people just because I had so much experience to relate. And then my last stint in the G League, right before I went to the Cleveland Cavaliers, my call-up didn't come right away. And I was preparing to retire. And I finished the season out. And I finished after the point in time where most people get called up, there was a road where I could have just went home or finished the season out. And my coach called me and we had a hell of a conversation. And in that conversation, he was like, you have a lot to give to the game. Why don't you come back and just keep sharing? And he gave me the motivation to come back. So I came back. I hung more with the coaches at that point in time, just trying to learn the game in a different capacity. At that point, when I was in the G League at the end of the season, I started learning sports code. I started being involved in coaches' meetings, trying to understand that dichotomy of what was going on. And then I ended my season with just trying to make as many relationships as possible. I got called up to the Cavs, and I finished two more seasons after that. But that was the beginning of me being that to my teammates. And then when I was on the Cavs, it was super cool to see a guy like LeBron James. If I gave him some information, he would go out and use that information and not look at me like, since he had so many accomplishments, that the information wasn't valued. And when he valued my information, that was a unique relationship that helped me understand that I did have something to get back to the game and gave me a different perspective.
Yeah. You know, I think another thing that probably, I'm not going to assume this, but I'm guessing that it did relationally, is throughout your career, you have different roles. Sometimes you're a heavier minute guy, maybe a little bit more in the upper part of the rotation. Then sometimes you go from a guy that's maybe in the mid rotation, however many minutes that may be. Then you go from a guy that really doesn't play much, but then your impact of your, it's like the James Johnson with the Pacers. Jawan Howard did it for I call those guys selfless vets, is that they just, their presence, like they walk into the room and already the locker room's better just by those guys walking in. And so by having those different roles throughout your career, I'm assuming that's probably helped your relatability to players, because you've walked just about every journey that these guys could have, whether it's guys that came up through the G League and now the two-way guys that you come across, just being able to have understanding what those conversations are. So is that something that you feel like has helped you, because you've lived out pretty much every role that a guy can have?
Definitely. My journey has prepared me for this moment to be able to be a coach. Not only being a rookie, having to play under solid veterans, like I played behind James Posey, Mike Miller, Shane Battier, Bonzi Wells, like those guys were all in a rotation. I got to learn from them on a daily basis, but also compete against them and understand how the league works in itself, how to be prepared for my moment, and even to fight when it doesn't seem fair, to keep working on a daily basis, diligently on my craft, to be able to be prepared for anything that comes my way. I've been a starter, started in the conference finals, been on great teams, came off the bench, not played when I thought I should have played. And then at the end of the bench, at the back end of my journey, being the vet that keeps everybody prepared, that keeps everybody united, finding a shared responsibility, cheering on our teammates, like that is my journey, but that's also what goes into being good teams, everybody plays a part in that. So I can speak to all of those guys. I can speak to the even the Max guy, who I've seen so many great Max guys on how they were on really good teams and how they were on bad teams, how they prepared, how they led, whether it be vocally or whether it be by their actions. Like, I can speak to all those guys because I have relationships with those guys, and I've also seen how they work and intermingle with their teammates. So, yes, my journey definitely has prepared me to be able to coach a lot of different personalities and a lot of different situations.
Yeah, 100%, man. Yeah. No doubt.
Is there anything coaching at the NBA level? Now, I know I will say, make sure to say that I know you are newer into the coaching side, but obviously with everything that you've said, you've been coaching before you've even stopped being a player. Is there anything coaching at the NBA level side that maybe a lot of like other coaches out there don't know about, or other people who are aspiring to potentially be an NBA coach? Is there anything more on the back end that, or anything misunderstood, I guess, from being from the NBA side of coaching?
The time commitment, the time away from your families, like the how you have to make everything work, how you have to make the best efficient use of your time, not only at work, but also at home. These are the things that coaches don't get enough attention to because they have two responsibilities to their family and to their job. How much time you spend away from the house and how much time you have to make up when you get back into the house.
That's right.
Like, I have kids that look to me for a bunch of different things, and I'm trying to be a lot of things to them, but also I'm trying to master my craft as well. So, like, people don't understand how many hours goes into the coaching profession, whether it be at work, but not only when you get home, how many hours of film we're watching, how often we're preparing, how much we're preparing, even when we're not preparing, how much basketball is always on our minds. I often am just daydreaming about different scenarios or different ATOs because I'm on a 24 cycle of basketball. How much basketball is 365 days of the year? Like, maybe one 7 days of off season, but of off time. And then it's back to the new crop, whether it be the draft or whether it be summer league or whether it be just preparing your young guy to just be successful and have an opportunity. People think once the season's over, whether it be in April, that like you guys just go away to October, and that's not the case.
Because exactly.
And but mind you, it's what I love to do. I love to be in the gym. I don't like to be outside. I don't like to hike. I like to hear those sneakers screech. I like to hear that ball bounce. I like the music. I like the camaraderie. I like the competition. I like the banter. I like every part about it. So it dominates me when I go home, but it dominates when I'm here because I really don't want to leave. Bring my kids into the gym. This Sunday, yesterday, my two boys are working out because they pull that from me. So that's just what our life is, but you have to be prepared to give your life to it, and it has to flow seamlessly, because once you do that, then you're having a great time at what you do.
Yeah. No, you've yet to work a day in your life.
Not at all.
Which is a beautiful, that's a beautiful thing to say, to be able to say that. I have a question about, and I don't know, was it last summer or the summer before when you coached the summer league team?
I coached both. Both years.
Okay. The last 2 years. Okay. So let's go back to the first year you did it. I'm guessing that was your first time to actually build up and prepare to be a head coach for the first time.
NBA wise, I don't count you. I'm coaching kids, but yes, to build up to that,
right.
Guys. But yeah, so talk about what that felt like. Every head coach for the first time has a wow moment. I know mine was just how fast Brad Brown, out of Clemson, had told me. He's like, Alan, timeouts go fast. So what was it like for you just that first time? I know you spent some time, you go through the pre-draft stuff and the decision's already been made. You're going to coach the summer league team. Then here's the draft. And now you're at this period now where training camp starts in a few days. So just talk about maybe just a couple of maybe eye-opening or wow moments for being a head coach for the first time.
I didn't have an eye opening because I approached it from being in their shoes. Mind you, I had been a part of summer league before. I had been a part of summer league as a rookie, and I had been a part of summer league as a vet and trying to earn my way onto a team. I understood the cadence of the game. I understood that it was going to be faster and more physical, and that we didn't have that much time to prepare. And you don't know what you don't know until we get in these situations. In preparing, I prepared like I was a college kid coming to this game and trying to help them understand what they don't know, get them up to speed, try to monopolize my time as much as possible, make sure I didn't waste any of their time, make sure they were all having as much fun as possible. And I say that because the young guys had been here all year long and they never had much time off. So I understood what it felt like to be in the gym, not have an opportunity, have to come back, be in the gym, keep working, and not want to be in a practice environment, but still have goals and want to be better. Like, I try to make it as fun as possible, help them enjoy the game as much as possible, not be in a routine of like super strict practice, a drill. I try to relate to what their experience was and help them and enjoy it. Number one, see what and understand what the common goal, try to create a level of accountability, a shared responsibility where all these guys are trying to achieve the same goal and how we can do it. Express it in what people are looking for, how hard they had to play. Like, not just because you're not getting a lot of minutes doesn't mean that you can't get something out of this opportunity by how hard you play. Like, we all need defenders. We all need guys that play hard. So if you guys all come in here, like, that was the message to the group. If I can get 12 guys that play as hard as they can and defend, communicate, you guys can have an opportunity to go out there and make rosters. And if we were the loudest group there, if we were the most intense, if we were the most physical, like, guys can pick any one of you off and put you into their system right now because they all need those things. So I approached it from what we were looking for, what I had been through, what I had seen out of their eyes, and try to make it and try to put all that all together. That was a process of just trying to relate to the group of guys because they all talk to me in different ways. I see all the emotions of what I've been through in their eyes anyway, whether they say it or they don't say it. So that was how I prepared for our summer league. And then those guys had a great experience. We laughed. We did a lot of laughing. We did a lot of competing, and we had a really good time. And I enjoyed that experience a good deal.
What I love about that, and Dougie, he got me on a tangent here, but it's a good tangent. You just define the essence of really what head coaches should be about, because I hope I'm wrong with this, but I don't think I am. Not everybody goes in the summer league as a head coach with that approach. I'm sure a lot of guys go into it maybe with, this is my time or my chance or my, and that's okay. Ambition's great, but sometimes it can be misplaced. In our profession, we know what that is. But you approached it as a servant. And because you approached it as a servant, everybody benefited, because again, you've got all these experiences in your rearview mirror that literally intertwined or interconnected. When a young guy right before the first summer league game is nervous, but he's quiet, you can look at him and know exactly, this dude shook. I just need to tell this guy to go relax, go play hard. You've been doing this your whole life, man.
Sure.
So you can feel that without a guy saying a word. That's invaluable. But just the fact that you approach it as a servant, man, that's the coolest thing, because our game needs that desperately, is coaches that just are about helping players get better. Because if you help players get better and you commit to that, you get the joy by default, because their joy becomes yours. Just by default.
My main goal also was to teach them how hard they had to play and how hard they could play to be able to survive in this league. And that was my journey. That was how I was able to just hold on as long as I did. That was the way I could serve my teammates and be a part of something special, just by playing hard, giving myself to the team. And that was like the main goal for those guys, because we didn't have any on my teams. Not a knock on anybody's talent, but we didn't have any number one, number two, number three picks. We had a bunch of guys that were going to have to grind and get through and be able to do all the dirty work for a team to be able to help the team. And that was the way they're going to be able to get on the floor, and that was be able to survive and take care of their families. So that was the mentality I used in those 2 years for those guys, to help them show how they can help NBA teams.
100%. Yeah. And that you can impact winning in so many more ways than you think you
Definitely.
Can. Because 90% of the time, you're not going to have the ball in your hand. So how can you impact Definitely. Winning in different Definitely. Ways?
I'm going off of your experiences too, having a 13-year NBA career, and then with the teams that you had, I believe it was about 8 different teams, the coaches that you've been a part of and the programs that you've been a part of, the experiences that you had, like, I don't want to say easy, but it's probably a little bit easier for you to be able to go back to those guys and say, look, I've been through this. I know exactly what you're going through. And then it can at least, I shouldn't say exactly, but be able to relate to those guys, you know, because at that point, people are probably a lot more inclined to open up to you and then start talking to you. And then that's where the whole outside of basketball starts to open up, because now you're starting to get to know this person as an individual. And especially, I don't want to speak for you, but in the G League, I'm sure it'd probably be pretty hard to coach people that you don't necessarily know, because they're just ever changing and moving in and out so much.
I can draw personal stories, personal hardships. Like, I can help them see themselves, see myself in them, and help them see this thing holistically. I can help you out with personal issues. Like, I can see when it's more than just basketball. It's just this whole career that I've had that maybe I didn't enjoy as much when going through it. Maybe I grunted through it at times and didn't understand it. It's prepared me for this opportunity to be able to help as many young kids as possible. Being a parent helps me coach as much as possible as well, because I have five kids with all different personalities. It helps me understand how they all tick and how it all works with them, and how I can't talk to them all different ways. I can't parent them all different ways. I can't love them all different ways. All the same way, I have to choose which way resonates with them. So all these things help me like become a better coach, become a better communicator, become a better human being, and helping other people accomplish their goals.
Mage, I can't wait. Give it five, 10 years. You think we're going to be seeing him
another couple more seasons? People are stupid if they wait that long. Somebody that has any sense is going to snap this cat up very soon. I don't know what soon means. I wish I had a crystal ball where I could tell you so you could brace yourself and get ready. But the moment is coming. It's just, this sounds crazy what I'm about to say, but literally you approach a head coaching opportunity like you've approached everything else. You work on your game till the phone rings.
Right.
And what you're doing now, last 2 years, summer league, every experience you have, as you move forward throughout, you're working on your game as a coach. And so what you tell guys when they come off the bench is stay ready for the moment you don't know is coming. And so that's what you're doing now. You don't know when the moment's coming. You deep down believe it will. You don't know when. So you're not going to let the fact that you don't know when overconsume you. You're going to consume yourself with staying present in every way possible. Because the ability to stay present now as an assistant, as a husband, as a father, as a coworker, all that is going to help you become a better head coach, because that's the ultimate superpower as a head coach is, do you have the ability to be present? Because now the people that you go from focusing on yourself to now you're worried about everybody. And now you've got to master the ability to be present with everybody. Now it's interactions with the owner, interactions with front office people, media, press conferences. So your ability to be present over and over again, but you're practicing that now. It's just like anything else. You stay ready for the moment that you don't know when the moment's coming. You said 5 years. I'll be pissed if it's 5 years. I'll knock somebody out because this guy's ready to roll. Seriously, I'll throw a baseball bat, come after somebody, because our game needs guys like this guy right here. So
I appreciate
no doubt. You got it.
Coach Jones, like I said, I'm obviously very excited to be able to just chat with you a little bit. I was fortunate enough to be able to watch you throughout your career, primarily with Cavs, and it was obviously bittersweet to be able to see you guys bring something to Cleveland. That's my selfish behalf. But at the same point now, from the coaching perspective, just being able to now see like where the playing to coaching side goes. We thank you for being able to be on here and just share all this with everybody, because we've had a lot of coaches, and do not get me wrong, very ecstatic about the people that we've had the opportunities to talk with. But you've had a longer playing career, and I feel like hearing it from the other side is so much better, essentially, just because now you can actually hear it from the player's perspective and being able to relay it to the coach's side of things. I think that's going to help people out a lot more. But just wanted to tie it all up, as we typically do, bringing you through everything that you've been a part of. If we were to put you, and I guess you're ultimately back in your first coaching position now, but knowing what you know now as a coach throughout your career and everything, is there any advice maybe you have for younger people out there, or for your younger self, just for about the coaching profession?
The advice I would give ex-players, number one, don't be afraid to keep playing and to teach through how you play. Player development positions are usually the opportunity where guys get to come into coaching right now. And they not only give you the ability to teach, but they also rely on you guys to go out there and play and to be able to compete with those guys when the numbers get low, and to take advantage of opportunities and be present in those, but be present in teaching them how to compete. That's the thing that's missing from our game today, is the level of competition necessary to be really good and to help your team be really good. And then number two, just to be humble enough and keep being humble enough to teach grab different things that you don't know from it, whether it be different ways of grabbing information, learning different responsibilities that other people have in the organization, just to keep learning in those developmental years of just trying to learn as much as you can from the people around you. In my first couple of years, I didn't pull enough people aside and ask as many questions as I wanted to. I've been around some really great coaches. My first year I had Chauncey Billup and Roy Rogers. And those are the guys I wish I picked their brains a little bit more and understood their process and procedure just to understand how they do it, to give me a more of a bearings of how I want to do it or what I can grab from them. So young coaches, I would just advise you, all the coaches that you get a chance to interact with and work with on a daily basis, just to ask as many questions around the coaches that you do have in front of you, and to don't be afraid to grab information, because coaches want to give the information out. They just don't know what information to give to you.
Yeah, no doubt. No, the only bad question is the one you don't ask.
True so, indeed.
Yeah, so I love that, man. Be a relentless learner. Listen, man, before Doug lands the plane here, I just want to say thank you. Number one, it's great to finally meet you. I feel like I've known you a little bit through Chris, because Chris is my guy, man. I'm so proud of him. So proud of him. But just thank you for taking the time. I know a million things are going on. Draft just ended. Summer League coming up. So for you to step into our little bubble here, it means a lot to us. But everything you shared is so good for what we're trying to do with this pod, is make the game better. Rising coaches to us means let's make all coaches rise, youth league to NBA and everybody in between. It's not about the top 40, under 40, and all that stuff, earmarking guys and none of that. This is about how do we make the game and raise the profession. So rising coaches got better today. That's for sure, man. So we appreciate you.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you for having me on. It's great meeting you guys, and I appreciate all the work you guys are doing.
Yes, sir. No, thank you. Thank you. We're humble and happy. Happy to be able to have these conversations. Learn from you, but then also, like we said, just being able to get these stories for people that maybe they need to hear. There's people going up in the industry that need to hear this kind of stuff. But thank you. And for everybody out there that does it, puts the bow on top and wraps it up for another Rising Coaches podcast. Thank you all for tuning in. Again, Alan Major, Doug Caputo, keep working out there, coaches. Keep rising. See you all soon.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.